Hello, everybody. I'm John Melke, and welcome to Parkside Today. It's a pleasure to be joined by Associate Professor of Philosophy, Dr. Christopher Hudspeth. And today we're going to talk about smart cities and smart futures and all of the ways in which we're going to be smart in the future and in the cities we live. I have had discussions and conversations with a number of people about smart cities, and I'm going to be the first to admit that I don't know very much about smart cities. I think, you know, you hear different descriptions. If someone comes up to you and says, Christopher, what is a smart city? What's a smart city going to be? Yeah. What's your answer to that question?
Yeah, I think my first answer is a heavy sigh. it is a totally fair question. And in fact, lots of people are uncertain, even people who work in the industries that work and associated with it, even they have trouble at the moment sort of describing what smart cities is, because it's such a new area that it has not solidified into having a very coherent definition yet, which actually makes it a lot of fun, because it means that there's a lot of space to grow and develop and make it is what we want.
Sure.
But I take it that in the broadest possible terms, the simplest explanation of a smart city has to do with the technological innovations. I've actually made arguments in the past that we've always had smart cities, but what it takes to be smart is what has changed. Mm-hmm. And so in the modern era, the sort of major transitions, the things that have really made it a smart city, is that the automation, because of the intercommunication between the devices that exist in our lives, and offloading some of the control of those devices from human control into artificial intelligence control.
Okay.
It's the combination of those two things that I think in the broadest possible sense is what makes something a smart city. Mm-hmm. It's basically allowing a human being to take a step back from it, and yet water flow, traffic conditions, you know, stoplights, all this other stuff ends up being picked up by the machines themselves making the decisions.
Sure.
But importantly, and this cannot be overlooked, these various devices that we have in our lives need to intercommunicate for a smart city. We've had sort of self-regulating devices for a really long time. I mean, the thermostat in your house, even the old rheostat, right? You know, just a mechanical one, was a self-regulating device. You set it a certain thing, it decided when to turn on, it decided when to turn off.
Right. But
it didn't do it in conjunction with whatever your hot water heater was doing, or your dishwasher, or what your neighbors were doing. And now these devices are going to be able to talk to each other and make, decision almost is too strong, but they're going to be able to make collective actions, or actions judging also on what other things are doing. And so that, I take it, is the real core basic idea of what a smart city is, is when all of that stuff starts working together.
Right. And how UW-Parkside has been offering, and I believe I have this correct, that it started in the fall of 2018 with...
Offering what?
Offering the Smart Cities courses.
Introduction to Smart Cities.
Introduction to Smart Cities.
Was a 100-level course that we offered for the first time last fall.
Mm-hmm.
We ran it as a Gen Ed 193 that year.
Okay.
Because it was a first kind of go at it, and it was successful, so we decided to sort of create it as a permanent class, which I did this past year. And so we will be running it in the fall. It's housed under the Center for Professional Studies, and it is CPS 103.
Okay. How did that take us through how it comes about? Where it doesn't just pop up one day.
No, it did not. Largely, it's the instigation of the dean, Dean Peggy James. Followed very quickly by the support of the chancellor. Those two things that are really what made this permanent class happen. The dean's motivation for it is when Foxconn sort of announced that they were moving to Racine County, and Foxconn put out their sort of a first initial sort of outline of the plans and the things they had. Foxconn announced in there that they were going to build a smart campus, and they were. If I remember correctly, they were even planning on building a small little village out there initially with housing.
Yeah.
And they were claiming that was going to be a smart city. And so in our college meetings, you know, something that big happening in our community definitely ends up being something we talk about, and how is it going to impact us, and, you know, what kinds of things do we need to do differently? and we began talking about a smart city in that context because Foxconn was. And we realized that even though, generally speaking, most people think about smart cities from the technological side, you know, developing the apps and developing the electrical engineering and the computer science, that the College of Social Science and Professional Studies actually had quite a good handle on really a lot of the smart city interactions. So sociology, criminal justice, geography, political science, all of those things actually had a really important connection to smart cities.
Yeah.
And so the dean, I almost want to use the word commissioned, but that's not quite right coming from the dean. But she asked for various members in the college to work on a white paper about the impact of Foxconn and smart cities on the region.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put that together. It got passed around in the college before finally getting sent off to the administration. And it was in that process that the dean realized that we really needed to get on the bandwagon and offer at the very least a beginning class,
sure,
the introduction to smart cities.
Sure.
And then when you went around the college and said, well, who thinks they're ready to teach this class? Turns out that was me. So, so here I am.
Was that like everyone took a step back and you were standing forward? Or
a little bit of that. It was kind of more like, it kind of happened a little bit more like, who knows what a smart city was? And then you looked around the room and I was the only one with my hand up as actually knowing what it was about 3 years ago. And so that was the beginning of the Intro to Smart Cities course. And then over the course of this year, seeing just how much things were developing and then the city of Racine pursuing and earlier this year getting the Smart City Readiness Challenge,
right,
we realized we actually needed to do more than we were already doing. And that's when we began developing the Smart City Certificate at the graduate level.
Okay.
And so we got the classes made for that. And so we'll also be teaching the graduate certificate this fall, beginning this fall of smart cities.
Okay. And tell us, how does, when you say the graduate certificate, how does a person who says, oh, I might be interested in that, how do you go about earning, working toward achieving that certificate?
That is an excellent question, and this will be a fun little experiment.
Okay.
Parkside has not yet ever actually offered graduate certificates before.
Oh, okay.
It actually took us quite a while to put the bureaucracy in place for this.
Mm-hmm.
We were allowed to do it, but no one at Parkside had actually officially run a certificate. I believe that there are some postgraduate work that can be done. I think, especially even in the, I think geography has some qualifications that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
But this will be the first actual certificate, and so we had to. I mean, we literally had to run it through the entire bureaucracy to get the work in place.
Sure.
But very simply, it's an opportunity for somebody who is not looking to pursue a further degree, who doesn't want to come and become a full-time student again or get a master's degree, but who would like a little bit more training.
Mm-hmm.
And they can, and I'm going to use a terminology that is familiar to me from other schools, it's what I call a non-degree-seeking student.
Mm-hmm.
You can just come and take the 5 courses necessary for the certificate and then be awarded the certificate at the end of it, is what it is. And
But you're talking about a person who already has
a bachelor's degree.
Earned the bachelor's degree.
Yep, yep. Right. And very specifically, it has to be somebody who's already earned a bachelor's degree. If you have not yet earned a bachelor's degree, you cannot participate in this program.
Mm-hmm.
Not to dissuade anybody, if you don't have an undergraduate degree, let me encourage you to come and, and take the other classes
the
here.
Other classes,
there's
right.
other degrees
right,
we can
right.
offer for you.
Yeah.
But the graduate degree, the graduate certificate, it was designed for that. And we wanted to take advantage of what it is that we think we actually have the skill set to do here at Parkside. We're never going to be able to compete against Madison when it comes to pure technological prowess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just have resources and facilities and an entire engineering school that we simply don't have.
Right.
And so it would be foolish for us to try to, like, you know, take away market share from them. But what we do actually have quite a good ability to do is to focus on the other aspects of smart cities. I think it's an important thing to think about. You know, no matter what we develop technologically, we still have to find a way to integrate that within society and to make it function in the ways that we want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we designed it around. So we have one of the classes is on public-private partnerships. One of the classes is on sort of smart policy making, like how should cities and communities make policies in order to not take advantage of, but to get what they want out of this smart city, which, as we've already admitted, is still as yet undefined. And so what it means to become a smart city could be very different in different communities.
Right.
I mean, the practical examples, there are some kind of obvious ones to use immediately, right? Probably the most eye-catching one is whether or not a city should allow self-driving cars.
Right.
The flip side of that is whether or not, once we have self-driving cars, should a city allow individuals to personally drive their cars, right? So mandatory self-driving cars.
Yeah.
And even though when you first hear that question, a lot of people might just think the answer is obvious, it's not, because there's no necessary way that a society or a city has to be organized. And so we need to think not just about what we want from our society, but how best to achieve that and to encourage it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what our certificate is focusing on. Now, it's just 5 classes, so it's not going to be, you know, deep dive. And I'm a philosopher, so I'd like to go a lot further, but it's a good starting point for getting people who either work in industry or who work in government or who are interested in, I don't know what the word I want to use here. It's not work in government, right? But community members who want to do service in the community, who want to drive position. This is a great opportunity for them to sort of figure out what's going on and learn about it and, you know, get some skills and some tools to make an impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, even this morning there was I didn't read the story in the Journal Times, but the city administrator is moving on to a new position. And there was a story about that person, leaving. And I thought, well, someone like a city administrator, they need, as smart technology continues to develop in urban areas, you need to at least understand what that is about so that you can make decent decisions or make appropriate decisions.
Absolutely. You need to, at the very least, as you say, know what the topic area is, because you're going to be presented with these as issues and topics, and having, you know, and being presented with those as issues and topics, you're going to have to make decisions about it. And you're either going to come into those and somebody's going to present the decision to you and you're going to be like, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. Or you're going to be like, oh, that's great. I know something about this. I understand the basic concepts, ideas, the scope of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as Corey Mason, the mayor of Racine, has pointed out, when they won their Smart City Readiness Challenge, there's far more cities in the United States that are closer to the size of Racine and Kenosha than there are cities closer to the size of Chicago.
Right.
So there are quite a lot of people in the U.S. who are actually going to need this opportunity and this ability. Which is good, because our certificate, the online certificate, the graduate certificate is actually completely online. The undergraduate course is an in-person course, but the graduate one is online.
So when you started teaching the undergraduate course in the fall, what were maybe some of your expectations, surprises? What came out of the course where you thought, yeah, this is kind of going where I thought it would, or didn't expect to see that?
Yeah. So I definitely had a lot of ideas planning the course.
Mm-hmm.
And then while I was already in the middle of planning it, and right before the semester started, Foxconn announced that they were going to be doing that competition people designing apps and various things.
Yeah.
And so I actually had to change the entire course design, because if Foxconn's doing something where students can get an award, and the due dates were actually during this semester, I wanted to make sure the students took that opportunity as well. And so I altered the kind of structure and the assignment due dates and even a little bit about what I was going to be asking them in order to facilitate that Foxconn project, which was quite great. I mean, every student in the class participated. One of them actually made it through the first round to the second round, which is great. I mean, I love the idea that one of my students actually got a check for taking my class from somebody, which was kind of cool.
Right.
There's a lot of literally minor teacher things that I don't know anybody's necessarily that interested on, like how the assignments I would do a bit differently and how I would structure them and what I would make them do. But I did learn myself a lot because of the projects that the students, so I was trying to just sort of, cause it's a 100 level class designed for freshmen, but anybody can take it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was largely designed for people who had no idea what smart cities were, and 85% of the class on that first day, I asked, do you know what a smart city is? And they had no idea. So mm-hmm. it was, I aimed in the right place.
Yeah.
But what I had them do is we talked about issues and ideas and where cities might have need to be smartened, right? I spent a couple of weeks talking about what the idea of a city is and why they exist and what's the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started just going through different areas where cities have these features and how can they be improved. And so the projects that the students did were to find something, and it was up to them and their own interests and allowed to be targeted towards whatever their major was, but find something where they thought that they could come up with a concept of, we weren't trying to build apps. We didn't have that kind of time or mm-hmm. focus,
mm-hmm.
but just where do you think we could improve our society by making it smart?
Yeah,
and so they did all did presentations at the end of the semester about that. And that fit perfectly with what Foxconn was doing with their competition.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were some surprising ideas in there, some interesting ones that I like, which apparently my students are thinking along the lines of a lot of other people, because in the 6 months since then, I've seen some of those ideas actually come to fruition by completely separate people in different parts of the U.S. and whatnot.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, things about garbage cans, you know, where all the garbage cans in the city become smart so that you don't have to go along and empty all of them. You only have to empty the ones that you know are full and that kind of stuff. There was one about traffic patterns, which I thought was really interesting and required like edge computing and all this other stuff, where you would do predictive modeling by seeing where cars were coming down the road so that you wouldn't have to drive up to the light and wait for it, that the intersection would know, oh, there's cars coming from three blocks away, but I don't have anybody coming the other way at that point, so I'll cycle before they get here, that kind of stuff, which I thought was pretty interesting and cool.
And you also did brown bag sessions for those maybe not familiar with the term. It's something that takes place here at UW Parkside kind of over the lunch hour, and you're encouraged to bring your lunch. And the discussion, as I understand it, was open to the entire community. Anyone could come and take part.
Absolutely. I'm a huge believer in the Wisconsin idea, that the idea is that the borders of the university are the borders of the state. So whenever I do anything that I can, I try to make it as open to the public as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was an introductory class and I wanted to, I guess, show how smart cities connects to all of our lives, no matter what you're doing. I really wanted to have a brown bag series, and I get a little pushback from other people. I use brown bag, and I'm very specific. I take brown bag to mean something that happens at lunch. You can bring your lunch. You can sit there. But I also mean it to be that they're largely not calm, not colloquial. They're low key. But I always try to have them be done by the professors here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, you're right. We ran one of those. We did about 10 or 12 weeks of those.
Okay.
So every Wednesday at noon, we had a different professor showing how their field of study impacted or related to smart cities,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm actually working on putting that together for this fall. And I'm trying to get where people's research has moved forward in the connection with smart cities. I'm bringing them back, but where somebody who presented last year, I'm not just going to bring in the same people every year. I'm trying to get other new people to participate.
Sure.
I have about half those people set up right now, but the plan is to have that every Wednesday this fall as well. And again, it's to be open to the public, that anybody's welcome to come to it, because the idea again is smart cities are coming. I mean, there's no holding it back.
Right.
And we need to be aware of the issues so that we can sort of make the right kind of decisions about it. One of the areas where this is going to come probably sooner than later is energy policy and what's happening with our energy grid.
Mm-hmm.
We had several different presentations that kind of honed in on electricity. We had one about security and how secure is our electrical grid. We had one about policy. We had one about how green is it last year. But again, just to kind of drive home just where smart cities are going, the power companies will be putting in meters that will read real time how much power you're using.
Right.
They do not, most cities do not currently have that capability, but the power companies are going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do that, they're going to then start doing dynamic pricing, where your electricity is going to cost different amounts during the load, during the time of day.
Right.
That's just what capitalism is going to drive people to do. And so we need to be aware that's going to happen. But that's why you're going to want to have a smart dishwasher, a smart washing machine, smart maybe even hot water heaters or whatnot, because you're going to want your machines in your home to know when not to run, even though you've turned it on to run.
Right.
Right.
Don't run the electric bill right now because it's at the highest cost of the day.
Exactly.
Like we can wait an hour or two.
Yeah, or it can turn on, if it's the dishwasher, it can turn on at 3 o'clock in the morning. You don't have to.
Yeah.
And you're going to want the machines to make those choices. I know a lot of people do it themselves now by turning on the dishwasher when you go to bed or something. But the machines are going to want it. But then that comes back to, what kind of policies do we actually want in our society? It would take a lot of sort of groundswell and work, but we can actually make policies that say the electric company cannot do surge pricing, right?
We could
do that if we wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we want to? Do we not want to? I'm not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
As we improve our electrical grid, we're going to have more homes with solar power. We used to have policies about how much the electric company had to pay you for your extra wattage that you transferred back to the grid.
Mm-hmm.
Those policies changed. Those rates went down. It radically changed the calculus on how worth it was to actually put in solar power.
Right.
And again, as a society, we can choose what kind of policies we want our city governments, our state governments to run. And so we need to think about these kinds of things and what they're going to do.
Because right now, it's with the number of people that have started to use an alternative energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the power companies still have, they've got their base of operations.
Yeah.
They've got to have these things operating. And if so much is coming back to them, it becomes, they don't want to incentivize that.
They don't.
At all. And in fact, to start taking that down a bit.
Yeah, I want to be careful here. Electric policy and the electric grid is not actually my area of expertise, so I want to be careful about how much I say here.
Yeah.
But I do know that the energy grid is an expensive piece of hardware.
Yeah, right.
Right. And the electric companies are on the hook for it. All those power transmission lines have got to go someplace.
Sure.
And somebody's got to pay for their upkeep. And so they are very expensive. And even if I put solar power on my house, we're not at a place where I can completely get off the grid.
Yeah.
Because we might have multiple days of overcast and whatnot. And so every once in a while, even if I'm solar, I'm going to want to draw a little bit from the actual energy grid. But it's not worth it for the power company to have to keep up all those transmission lines to my house to get the $10 a year they're going to get out of me.
Right. Right.
And so we can understand why the energy company wants policies in place, and in fact, why we want policies in place, because we don't want our entire energy grid falling apart just because we wanted solar power. And so there are complications in this issue. As great as solar power sounds, we need to put other sorts of things in place. And again, the question comes down to what kind of policies are we going to put in place to incentivize the kind of structural supports that we really want to have in our society. Do we need more localized battery backups, like neighborhood batteries that all the solar houses in the neighborhood contribute to that can somehow store long term? Not my area.
Yeah, yeah. But interesting things to think about.
Amazing things to think about, which is why it's so great to have the Brown Bag series to get not just the students involved, but to get the students speaking to members of the community who have very different life experiences, who come from all sorts of different walks of life, but are coming together with our students and our professors to sort of make that whole conversation happen, to kind of have 18 and 19-year-olds, looking idealistically or whatnot towards the future, and then retired folks looking here's some things that happened to us, it's a great, great opportunity. Yeah. I'm going to try this year, and I've gotten one person to commit to it. I'm also going to try to have some keynote speakers. In addition to the Brown Bags, where we'll do it in the evening, which I'm going to be working on finding some other people. These are going to be more like industry folks, bring in people who have a real technical expertise in the area.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it's such an, I had the opportunity because of the fact that the chancellor was busy. and she asked if I wanted to go with Corey Mason, Racine Mayor, Jonathan Delagrave, County Executive, Brian Albrecht was there, Peggy James, Dean Peggy James, who we mentioned earlier, was there to Kansas City to talk about what
Kansas City
is doing with that. And it was a really interesting 2 days just to I like thinking about things in the future. You know, what's it going to be like and how do you do different things, and to hear how Kansas City has done things. But at one point, and I think I'm using his reference correctly, that Bob Bennett, who I believe is also maybe going to help Racine a bit, that he may be coming to, that Corey Mason had talked about, you know, his, whether it's on a consulting basis, but that he may be helping Racine. And he said, you can go back in time and make an argument that a stoplight was like a smart city technology. Because all of a sudden you had something that was controlling traffic rather than we just all drive up to an intersection and wonder, or the horse walks up to the intersection. Well, who gets to go? Well, here you go. Now we're going to control that. And and I thought that was a really to be able to think about. It's there.
Yeah.
It's just
how the
technology changes.
I hadn't heard him say that, but I used that exact example in a presentation I gave about smart cities. I was like, yeah, stoplight was one of the first smart things.
Yeah,
Kansas City is really a model for so many places.
Right.
Kansas City's really did a great job with it.
He gave a couple examples. Bob Bennett gave a couple, and people that were part of the 2 day presentation. He had a number of his colleagues in, and I don't remember all of the examples, but one where they were talking about potholes how they could take the knowing what causes a pothole with the freezing, thawing, and taking a look at streets where they have a history of a certain contractor putting a street in, and maybe that street is the longevity isn't that long, or maybe it is, and being able to say, you know, we think after this weather pattern that this is the area where we're going to see most of the you know, they could start to pinpoint those things.
Yeah, it's amazing what computers can do with big data, you know, with the massive amounts of data that they generate. I mean, it's like things that that a human would not be able to spot and identify, these and computers can just crunch those numbers and find the most amazing things, right? Like knowing that after a freeze rain cycle or a freeze thaw cycle, you know, they're going to be like, oh, on 22nd Street, there's going to be 3 potholes.
Right.
And just having it be right.
Yeah.
Just like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And no, that was a really interesting 2 days. I was glad I had that opportunity. So for whatever reason, the chancellor couldn't go, I was the beneficiary of
there
that.
There you go.
Christopher, you've been with the university for about a decade, and when you started here, did you ever think to yourself, you know, someday I'm going to be teaching smart cities classes?
No, not at all. Yeah, not even remotely. No.
And what was it as the opportunity starts to come about? What was it that, you know, kind of piques your interest where you go, yeah, I'd like to do that?
So when I started university as a freshman, I actually went in as an engineering student. I actually went in as a mechanical engineer.
Okay.
And in my first year, I actually ended up co-oping. So I was a co-op student even. I worked for IBM for a year.
Wow.
So I actually worked in the Research Triangle Park. I've always loved technology. I love machines. Mm-hmm. I love the way they work. I love the way they function. But along the process, I found that I really enjoyed my philosophy classes.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked the end state of engineering. I didn't really like taking thermodynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Getting myself to do thermo homework was kind of really hard. Getting myself to stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning writing a paper on Nietzsche was really easy. And so that's what happened in getting me into philosophy. But that meant my background has always been very strongly sort of like futuristic, sci-fi, technology, machines.
Yeah.
Building stuff. What piqued my interest is I'm just jazzed about it all the time.
Yeah.
I will say, and because in doing the smart city stuff recently, you know, trying to find something that connects more directly to what I do in philosophy and I focus on ethics, privacy has been the issue that I've been spending a lot of time thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that my my initial sort of introduction to that happened many years before I started thinking about smart cities. I was actually driving back from Sheboygan, and I was listening to the radio, and they were interviewing this guy, and they were talking about how the development of big data and computers doing data crunching was making it very difficult for the government to keep documents classified. Wow. Because as they were digitizing the documents, even if you blacked out the digit, you know, like a couple of sentences to keep a person's key name,
yeah,
you put a million documents online and suddenly the computers can cross-reference everything and they can fill in the missing sentences.
Yeah.
They could actually figure, and I was like thinking like, wow, the future is going to be crazy, mm-hmm. Especially in terms of things like privacy, because you're not going to be able to hide any aspect of your life in the future.
Right. Yeah.
Right. That's what sort of, and so when you're talking to me about like what's piquing my interest, of course the issue about like self-driving cars and like, ooh, should a car like, you know, avoid the three people in the road to hit the pedestrian on the yeah. side? Or like those are always fun and they make great classroom conversations.
Yeah.
And so I'm not trying to push, but this issue of privacy got me really interested. So when I started thinking about smart cities, that's the one that's been kind of driving the background of me is this idea that whatever it is we think privacy is, AI and big data are going to completely demolish it.
Yeah.
Like we're not going to have it in the way that we think we do.
Right.
And so that's what's been driving like me personally.
Mm-hmm.
But then the rest of the stuff I just think is fun, you know, like, so like every little issue in it. I mean, I've turned on my Google on my phone. So it gives me all like, it knows every place I go. It gives me a monthly update. It's like, you've walked 34 miles this month. Here's the 12 restaurants you visit. I mean, it
wow.
tells me
yeah.
all of this stuff
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
I forgot to put it back on, but I got one of those Fitbit thingies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine's a Garmin one though, but I got it so it like monitors my heart rate, cause I'm fascinated to see like,
yeah,
what happens with my heart rate? How many hours am I sleeping? How much, like, I just love all this stuff. So pretty much any of the smart city issues I love. I love what's like, I didn't know that this one I would love so much, but what smart cities are going to do for our water infrastructure is amazing. Like yeah. our water infrastructure leaks like a sieve, and that's not a metaphor. That's just how much it leaks,
yeah.
apparently.
Yeah.
The smart technology they're putting in the sewers, and not in the sewers, sorry, in the water pipes to figure
yeah.
it out, we're going to be able to save hundreds of thousands, if not millions of gallons a year. I mean, I'm just fascinated by all
yeah.
of it. It's so much fun.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly has been fun having you on Parkside today.
Oh, I'm
I know
happy to be
if
here.
If we started going off into, and I would like to do it, into more discussion about privacy and how big data and AI impacts
mm-hmm.
Privacy, I hope you'd come back and talk to us about that.
Always happy to come talk.
Good. Well, we've had Associate Professor of Philosophy, Dr. Christopher Hudspeth, on Parkside today. And we've been talking about smart cities, and we're going to have Christopher back to explore this subject more as the classes continue in the not too far distant future when the fall 2019 semester starts.
And, 2 months from now.
Yeah, 2 months from now. So, Christopher, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you for having me.